Had an amazing day yesterday. I'm kind of having amazing days all the time. And so are you. But there's a difference. I don't know that you're aware that you're having them. My son's birthday, my son turned 35, and we came down this weekend partly because I try to get here once a month to teach class, and partly because it was his birthday. And yesterday, we kind of gave the day to him and said, whatever you like, which was dangerous. Because we're so not alike on so many levels, and of course, the minute he decided what he wanted to do for the day, I went, "Oh my God!" And I didn't get the whole picture, but part of it included going kayaking. I have never kayaked in my life for a good reason. I had never wanted to kayak. It looks fine. I have nothing against kayaking. But I suddenly had all these reasons not to go. I don't know if you need to know all my medical history, but I have a hiatal hernia, and this kind of action is not great for it. I've also had two shoulder operations. This kind of action is probably not great for it. So I had a built-in reason to say no. And then the whole day began with lots of activities for which I was resistant. And the thing I have learned more than anything else in the whole world is to get out of my own way. And to be honest, I've been out of my own way now for a while. But it doesn't mean that these factors don't come in and show you where you're not. And it's really interesting because you really imagine that you're available to the universe until the things that are not available show themselves. And yesterday was full of that from the moment I woke up. as you can tell, I have a cough. I've had this for 3 weeks. And the night before this kayaking day, I coughed all night long. I took Robitussin, which didn't help. And so I'm tossing and turning and having one of those nights and feeling this day coming, which is like, on some levels, pure stress. And then I just went like that. And it's something I've learned to do over the years through this practice, honestly. And then it started to come naturally, and now I don't even have to exactly do it. It kind of happens. It just happens. The day ended. It was interesting. I'll go to that for a moment. Last night with a party next door, and the loudest rock music with speakers right here. They came right into the window up here, the skylight, right into the house. I mean, it was so loud. And at midnight, I thought, well, they'll stop, but they didn't. And it kept going on, and it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going, you know, I'm gonna have to teach class today, and I need to get some sleep, and I'm coughing, and all this stuff. And I just went, oh, well, oh, well. And I absolutely didn't care. The music just went, I was so surprised. I just watched this Bruce person going, oh, well. The upshot of this day was that I had one of the most wonderful days of my life. They're all becoming wonderful, but being with Ari and his this wonderful, wonderful girlfriend, beyond belief wonderful, perfect for him. And we drove up to Ventura County, and this is what it's, I'm trying to explain what spiritual life is. You just keep saying yes as it unfolds. Just yes. Or you don't even do that. You just don't obstruct. Or you just be real with it. So I discussed with Ari my tensions about going in a kayak. And he said, well, let's let the day unfold and either it will happen or it won't happen. And I said, that's kind of sweet. And we went to a strawberry farm and picked strawberries. I hadn't planned on picking strawberries, but they were amazing. And you'll get to have some of them for breakfast. And selecting these ripe fruit that had emerged out of seed forms, you know, but basically out of nothing, which is where everything comes from, out of nothing. These incredibly sweet gifts, just bursting throughout this whole vast field. I mean, it must have been acres and acres and acres. And it was so wonderful. And as we were picking, Ari looked out toward the ocean and he said the fog was starting to come in, which meant that the warmth of the day was about to get into something not warm. And there's something in me that went, oh, it's not going to be warm at the water. That didn't feel good. And then I just looked at that and went, okay. Anyway, we get to this place with the kayaks and we're there, and up to the very last second, Ari's going, you don't have to do this. You don't have to go. But I'm seeing how the arrangements are such that poor Blanche will be in a kayak all by herself. That didn't feel right. There were no three-person kayaks. There were other things you can do with your paddle boats. They had lots of things, a big marina, huge. And I knew this was going to happen from the beginning. I knew I was going to have to ultimately say yes, because I would have been the thorn in the side of a whole bunch of people. And it just felt wrong. And my needs and concerns and joys and fears and all that stuff were totally beside the point. There was no reason to say no. There's never a reason usually to say no. So I said, okie doke, I'll do it. I'll do it. And it was so other. I mean, in my mind, getting into a kayak on a pier and then rowing into, we didn't get to the ocean, but this vast area of incredible shipping boats and everything lining the shores. And I lower myself into the boat and Blanche is in the boat. And the next thing I see, this isn't hard at all. It's actually unbelievably wonderful. It's the movement, the gliding, the simplicity, the working with my wife together, and seeing Ari and Allison together, and we're going off together into this adventure, and it's so unknown and so unexpected, and on one level it's like nothing, it's like kayaking, no big deal, but it had been a big deal, and then it just became something else. And we are floating, and all of a sudden we start to see sea lions. And they're right there, and they're in the water, and then on this pier. I have never been that close to a sea lion, and they were like 500, 800 pounds. I mean, they were huge. I have pictures to prove it. And they were just looking at us, and I was looking at them, and I was going, there is something so magical going on here. It's so beautiful. It's so unexpected. And we just took this journey, and the flowing through the unknown, unexpected is so heightened and so wonderful and so joyous. And you realize, in a way, that this is the journey every day. But sometimes you have to get on a kayak to kind of knock that into the system, that you have to go into an altered state in order to appreciate the normal state. And then you have this simple adventure. It was absolutely wonderful. We come back to shore. Getting out of the kayak turned out to be the hardest part of the whole thing. Standing up from a seated position. You guys aren't at your 70s yet, but a good friend of mine who's goes to an exercise class. One of the exercises they give him is just lie on the floor in every different position and then get up. Just get up. And trust me, there's no more unbelievably powerful exercise than standing up from a seated or lying position when you're in your 70s. And it's also really important because a lot of people at the age of 80, that's the biggest thing that happens. You fall down and you can't get up. You just can't find the muscle coordination to do it. And, you know, it was getting out of a boat that's doing all of these things is really complicated. But, of course, you can do it. And we did it, you know. And we got out of the boat and we're on the shore. And then we went out to an incredible fish shack and had an incredible dinner and walked through Ventura City, I guess. I'd never been there. And it's an incredibly wonderful city. I had no idea. It's been up the coast not far from here since we've been here 30 years. We had never gone there. And Ari is trying to teach me this lesson about exploring what's in front of you, exploring what's there. And here's my kid feeding me back all of this stuff that I should have known. But he is giving it to me, and he's my little kid. And then we're sitting in the restaurant and wishing him a happy 35th birthday, and he takes us on a journey. And this journey was, when he had his real birthday 2 days ago, he was really unhappy. And he tried to figure out why. And he did a thing. I don't know how he did it because I couldn't do it. But he went back to every fifth birthday, all the way back to when he was 5 years old. And he remembered every one of them. And every one of them had an element of pain in it, which was partly Ari, partly the truth of all of our realities. You know, nothing usually is completely perfect. And birthdays are often kind of complicated in that regard because they often point that out. And he took us on the journey to being 35. And he had some really difficult birthdays along the way, some not well attended, some filled with personal issues that were starting to come up for him that became dominating issues in his life, and it's not for me to share that here, but they were big issues in his psychological development. And he got to 35, and other than the fact that his career in his mind has not become yet what he wants it to be, he said, he started talking about Allison, his girlfriend, who is truly, if there's ever a match made in heaven, this is that match, because it's hard to find who would be the right person. My other son, Josh, had the same experience. My kids, I don't know how, there was no chance they were ever going to meet anybody who was right for them. And they both lucked out on the most unbelievable level. And Allison is spectacular, and he knows that. And he said, I have never been happier. I'm 35, and I have never been happier. And it's true. He never has been. And he always thought his happiness would come from achievement, recognition, money, power, position, all these things he's been craving his whole life, partly out of a competition, I think, with me, partly out of a competition with himself, a desire to get out from underneath my shadow because he picked the same career. These are struggling points for him. And I think he thought his happiness would come by finding his own light, but in fact it has. His happiness came from something very simple, which is finding someone who cared about him and about whom he cares. And it's profound. And I didn't break out crying as he was telling this story, but in my insides, my heart was breaking and breaking and breaking, because all I want for my kids, all I want is for them to be happy, to have the life that they want. And he has always said his life was about getting this career thing, so I've devoted a lot of my time to helping that happen. But in the end, that hasn't happened in the way he wants yet. I think it will. But the important part of it is that he has found the truth of happiness and the core, and he has it already. And, you know, the idea is I can die tomorrow thinking, well, it's done. My kids are fine. Everything is fine. I've had a remarkable journey. And I can now sit back and go, thank you. And that's really how I feel. It's an enormous sense of fulfillment, watching your children be able to tell you that they're happy. It's kind of perfect. And there's another element to it, which is you need to be happy. That you too have a right to this happiness. And happiness for most of us has a very elusive quality. The thing that first shocked me as a kid when I was happy was realizing that it didn't last, that it would slip away. And I kept thinking, I haven't learned the secret. I haven't learned how to do it. I haven't learned how to keep happiness alive and flowing all the time. And I kept trying to figure out, how do you do that? And I was a failure. I was a complete failure. I mean, unhappiness would come up all the time. And I didn't know where the happiness had gone. And it's only in recent years that I've truly understood that happiness is not a constant. It arises and it falls away. Unhappiness is not a constant. It rises and it falls away. All of these emotions play through the system. The source of struggle is trying to hold one and get rid of the other. And the thing that's doing that is your mind. Your mind has been building an idea of what it wants from the very beginning and what it doesn't want. And it has absolutely no ability to control it. So what you want sometimes appears, and what you don't want sometimes appears, and you try to grasp it, and you try to make it work for you, and you try to even create a life that will lead to the thing that you want. And it almost always ends up in some kind of failure because there's no permanent anything. And what happens when you surrender, what happens when you let go, is you make peace with the happiness that arises and the happiness that falls away, with the unhappiness that arises and the unhappiness that falls away. You make peace with the changeability of your existence, because that's what it is. And as you make peace with it, you start to enter into this very quiet place, and you just are. And life happens. And you get to watch it happen from a place of deep stillness and ultimately amazing appreciation. It's taken me, as you all know, decades to arrive at a very simple state. And it takes this thing of throwing the big baggage of your mind overboard. All the big stuff. You got to get rid of the stuff that's not working, the stuff that's not real, the stuff your parents gave you that never held up, stuff your teachers told you that isn't true, the stuff your friends told you that you don't need to believe anymore. You need to jettison stuff. You need to jettison and jettison and jettison. And that's what meditation is. That's what surrender is. Excuse me. You let go of all of this crap. You just let go. Ernest Hemingway said, as a writer, you need to have a shit detector. Everyone needs it. You've got to be able to look at your own writing and go, that is shitty or full of shit. And you need to cut it out. You have to be willing to take paragraphs, chapters, characters, whatever it is that's not working in your story and go, it's no good. Get rid of it. And the great writers do that willingly. The lesser writers go, oh, it's my favorite character. Oh my God, I worked so hard on that part. Oh, that sentence, it was really, really important to me. And you just go, I can't let go of that. I can't let go of that. So you hold on to your shit, and anybody who ultimately reads your book will go, hey, this is a shitty book. You know, because you didn't do the work. And you end up in the same situation with your lives. If you don't jettison that stuff, if you don't look at your own life and say, no good, that doesn't work, and get rid of it, or get rid of your attachment to it, You don't end up with a life that smells good. You just don't. You end up with this kind of unpleasant thing. And it's never too late to begin this journey, to just begin saying no to this stuff. Let it go. And you arrive back at this place, which is really interesting, of what is it that knows what the shit is? What is it that knows that stuff? There's a part of you that does. It absolutely knows it, and either you're paying attention to it or you're not. But that part of you is rather dispassionate. It doesn't say, oh my God, that was the most important part of my life. It just goes, didn't work. Doesn't work. No, not needed. Let it go. Free yourself. Walk away. That's what it does. It just says, let it go. It's really an amazing thing. And this part of you, as you start to let go, creates something that is akin to, but is not what you would call happiness. It's akin to happiness because it underlies happiness. It's a kind of, let's use the word, it's not the right one, but it's the right idea, contentment. You find a kind of contentment in your life. Happiness is something that happens to you. Contentment, is what is underlying that. It can always be there. It is always there, except for your mind looking for discontent. Your mind engaging in unhappiness. It's a problem. Trying to be a simple human being in a complex world is very hard, and we all suffer with it. Every one of us suffers with it. Every day we get up in the morning and we go, whew. And when I woke up yesterday, everything pointed to a horrible day. Everything. And I could feel unhappy. And I could just feel it there. And last week I gave an interesting talk on a word that came out of nowhere for me called neutralize. And I will say it again. I looked at my day when I woke up in the morning and the word neutralize came into place, and I knew I had to neutralize all of this stuff. I had to neutralize this entire kind of negative, unhappy thing that was starting to happen. And I didn't do anything other than look at it. And as I looked at it and I brought clarity to it, it just started to break down. And I started to arrive at a place of accepting my day. And underlying that was contentment. And I have to say, the day was contented all the way. All the way. It had moments of happiness. It had moments of some unhappiness. But they were all part of being alive. And that's what all of us will go through. We'll have great moments and we'll have lesser moments. It's all part of the whole. So, every single day of your life, every contented day of your life is an engagement with the eternal. I've been doing a lot of talks recently about the eternal. We are all in eternity. Every one of us is in eternity. We are all going to live and be forever. I don't want to start a new dialogue here, but I want to say that not seeing that when you wake up in the morning is a sad loss of possibility. If you can wake up in the morning and realize on some quiet level that you are connecting to the infinite you, the infinite possibility of being, the unknown truth of existence, the luckiness of just waking up. If you can connect to that, you can have a remarkable, joyous journey. Whether you go kayaking, whether you go for a walk down the street, whether you just drive to get gas for the car, whether you go to the supermarket, it doesn't matter. The simple, mundane moment-to-moment reality of your life has an underlying contentment. And you will begin to find that once you stop trying to make it this or make it that and just open to, surrender to, and be one with what's in front of you. That's the whole thing. It's the whole journey. So you can have resistance. You may say no to kayaking, but don't let that stop you from going. Say no to stuff, but then go. Follow the passion. Follow the deeper, quiet contentment. Follow the thing that wants to arise and give it life, because it will give life back to you. And it's an extraordinary ride that we are all on, every one of us. And to miss it is the greatest source of unhappiness there is. Any questions? Questions? Dig deep. Kenneth.
I fly a lot.
You what?
I fly a lot.
Yeah, you do.
And
she's a flight attendant to Europe and Asia.
And for my whole career, 37 years, I have been terrified of turbulence. I don't want that to scare anyone. A pilot came out that was a friend of mine, and he saw my nervousness, and you know, nobody would see it, but inside I just would be falling apart, thinking I'm going to die. That's it. You were not. The wings aren't going. You know, irrational thought. He came out and said, "Think of turbulence as a pothole in your car. So you hit the pothole, and you just boom, boom." Like that. So I can't explain what happened, but he went back up into the cockpit, and from that moment on, it all went away. I accepted what was, what the universe could hold for me, what would happen if, all of that just like you said, it neutralized, it went away. The problem for me was in trying to relay this to other people that I knew, that know sort of what I do, and I tried to relay it in a spiritual way, only to be rebuffed. So my question to you is, what do you do when you're faced with people who don't want to hear what that death is in you about life, that moment of visualization of joy and peacefulness? You know, they don't want to hear it. How do you deal with that kind of
you don't.
Rejection?
Well, you don't. I mean, most human beings, honestly, have bought into the drama and illusion of this world. Almost everyone have bought into it and want it. Desperately hold on to the configuration of what life appears to be. And, you know, to sit down and tell them that this is a dream, it's an illusion, that it's eternity manifested in finite form, they want to believe you got to get a job and you got to have, you know, they want to believe in the agenda that's been given. And it's not our job to break them out of it. Right. Although it's fine if they are looking for that and you can find that spark or that look, or they come to you and ask, deliver what you have to deliver. But to give it unbidden is not going to make you a friend of anybody. They don't want to know. You know, it's just like sitting on a plane next to someone who's trying to sell you on Jesus as your Savior. You know, you're going, oh my God, I got 4 hours of this. You know, I mean, you close up. You don't want that. Even the first line is suddenly like shaking. It's like, oh my God, So when you do that to somebody else, you can sort of feel what they're not looking for that, and if they are, not from you, but in a conversation that's really flowing, and it starts to kind of come up by itself, and you sense an openness to it, you don't have to walk through that door gangbusters to sell something. You just walk through the door gently, and if people are interested, that will start to manifest itself as part of the dialogue. I find talking about anything else ultimately a little bit beside the point and boring. On the other hand, I have learned that every conversation, everything all human beings talk about without their knowing it, is whatever you want to call it, God, life, existence, truth. It's all, there's only one conversation going on here. I don't care if it's called talking about cars or talking about, you know, the movie you saw last week or whatever else. It's all talking about one thing. But it usually is ego to ego, and the ego wants to express its prominence and the other ego wants to express its prominence. It's so fascinating to me to watch how egos come up. Mm-hmm. One thing about having had a successful career is if I tell somebody, I think I've said this before, if I said to somebody, I'm an Oscar-winning screenwriter, they immediately go into, well, I'm... They desperately need to express their equality on some level. They don't want to hear another word from me because it's just going to challenge their ego mind. And that challenge is so uncomfortable for them that we have this one-upsmanship that's kind of at the core of a lot of our dialogue in the world. So it's about life because we don't know anything else, but it's also about my perception of life and who I am in life and why I have a kind of superiority. You know, I have people I know who are superior in their victimhood. They are defined by their victimhood. And the more life throws at them, the worse it gets, the more profoundly identified with that they are. I am the most unlucky human being in the world. And people get so focused on that kind of shit. But anyway, it's not really our jobs to pull people out of that unless it is. And if it is, you'll start to know that and you'll try to live it. I have found more and more that people who begin a dialogue with me are looking for something. I don't know how that happens or why, and so I feel the right to step in and kind of put things in kind of the perspective we're talking about here. I know pretty quickly if I was wrong, but I'm not so wrong anymore. And so I just go through and very gently bring it into focus. But what are you bringing into focus? You're bringing this into focus, life. You know, I mean, the crazy thing about all this, you know, and you've heard this from day one, what you're seeking in life is right here. It's nowhere else. It's never been anywhere else. It's right here. The amazing thing is that nobody sees it. Nobody's here. Everybody's somewhere else. Everybody. And when they are here for a moment and they suddenly realize it, they go, like, it's so, being here is to face being alive, being there forever. That is a big pop in your head. It's really big. And you go, get me back into little body personhood, you know? Let me have the little corner of the world that I call my own. Because in the end, this is only a temporary thing, this human person that we are. You are going to go back to what you are. And meditation and spiritual life is the preparation. It's the journey. It's the working that out. To avoid that in your whole life, which is what a lot of people do, it's fine. That's not terrible. It's just when you leave here, it's like, oh my God, that thing that you've been avoiding your whole life is now completely and absolutely unavoidable. The truth of who you are, which has nothing to do with you. You know, you were a tiny little speck in what you are. But you are both the speck and the infinite at the same time. And if you get that picture, you are going to walk through life in a state of wonder. If you don't get that picture, you're going to walk through life in a state of struggle.
Oh, thanks, Bruce. I think it's funny. It feels funny. You know, particularly for 8 years, I've been going, when am I going to get to do this thing that means so much to me? Well, I'm doing this thing that means so much to me any day now. And it's making a film and this wonderful cast. But, you know, of course, once you get to that stage where things are unfolding and it's happening, you've inherit enormous, enormous problems and challenges and complexities and just 1,000 a day. It's the way it's supposed to be. And I think I do, after 18 years of this, a reasonable job of reminding myself to do what you're recommending me do, around, you know, seeing what's beautiful inside this and letting go of some of the drama. And yet, it doesn't always, it's not feeling so good. And I'm like, how could this amazing thing be happening? And so many days I'm not feeling so good, even with, I feel like I'm, but maybe I'm not doing something. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe where am I doing it? It still doesn't feel that good. Mm-hmm.
But what makes you think feeling good is the idea? Maybe just feeling.
Yeah.
You're feeling. Feeling is an amazing thing. To feel anything is amazing. And to be under the stress and the pressures that you go under to make a movie, you know, nobody says that adds up as good, feeling good. It's just, it's going to be feeling a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, there's going to be a lot of intensity that you're going to feel. And then at some point that will be over. It'll be a, you know, a finished product. And that will be its own thing. And then the next desire will come into play and the next project that will come into play. God willing, it keeps happening that way. And so where's the lesson in all of this? I think the line that works for me is just show up. Mm-hmm. Show up to whatever is happening. You know, you did want this. Embrace it with everything in you. And understand it doesn't deliver any particular thing at any given moment. It's going to be what it is. And it's going to be tumultuous probably because it's a lot of activity from a lot of directions. And life is often that. It's often stormy. It's full of stuff, you know, but it's very alive. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful, very dynamic. And you have the capacity to process all that and to grow with all that as you will. And when you're really in the depth of it, in the middle of it, and actually it's shooting and all that stuff, I think you will keep finding these moments of focus, clarity, calm, because you have to. Because this is what you want. There's a moment, a really great moment in movie making, where the camera is rolling and you're either getting what you need or you're not. And everything determines on getting it, because you can't build the rest of your life without getting it. What does it mean to get it? What does it mean to make that happen? It's kind of what it means to be alive moment to moment to moment. How do you sit with each moment and say yes to it? This is what I need from it. This is what I want. So my experience yesterday, not to throw this back to me, but my experience yesterday was sitting with the realities that were unfolding, some of which were easy and pleasing, some of which were not appealing on any level. They were difficult and struggling for me. And I just said yes. And the minute I said yes, the thing started to happen. When you're shooting a scene and the actor's not giving the right reading on the line and you can't leave until they do, you have to find a way to align with that moment and neutralize, if you will, the problem. How do I talk to this person who's very professional and knows what they're doing? How do I give them an insight into something the way you see it that they don't see it? And you have to do it in that moment. And it's real life. It's like, this is not a dream of something that could happen. This is the real thing happening. And it's up to you to go into that moment and find that space. And because it's so important, you will. You will. You'll just find it. You know, it's really interesting. I was watching this movie, Jacob's Ladder, my film, Jacob's Ladder, and when we were shooting this one sequence in the film, there was one actor who could not get one line right. It was like, the line was like, how many times can you shit in an hour? And he's saying it to Tim Robbins. And the actor, who I loved, but couldn't say it right, how many times can you shit in an hour? He would go like that. And I go, no, it should be the other way. And I'm not the director, so I can't really say much. But he kept saying it wrong. And he could never, ever get it right. And I saw the movie for the first time in years. And the minute I heard him say, how many times can you shit in an hour? I went, oh! You know, 30 years later, it still hit me. So you really have to make sure you get it right now so you don't get those moments. And we all have to live our life, because you don't want a moment to go by in life that you did wrong that is always going to be there to haunt you. But if you do have a moment that haunts you, then you have to go back to that moment and you have to sit with it and neutralize it. Bring in whatever it is that takes the acidic bite out of it. And you just go, okay.
Well, if I may follow up, you know, the creative aspect really has been extraordinary. It's just that there's a enormous amount of drama and tensions, you know, just in putting a production together. Sometimes you run into a very intractable force. And the question sometimes I ask myself is, because I know in the creative you do have to get it. Sometimes you run up. Sometimes I ask myself, am I dealing with a force that can't be solved? Is there such a thing as letting go of such a...
Absolutely.
Someone anchored to drama, not a thing anchored to drama.
Yes, yeah, of course. Of course. You can come up against a rock that smashes your car, or something that cuts your tire. There's real things, real obstacles in the world, and then you got to deal with that. We all do. I mean, that's real life.
My instinct to say this is, can you solve, and can, and then that can get you in a little bit of trouble if you think you can solve every problem can be solved, because sometimes
every problem can be resolved in terms of your peace with it, but in terms of the actual shifting the gears of the world, if it has to happen instantaneously, sometimes you just don't have that power. If you were given 4 years to make it turn around, probably there would be a way to engineer a lot of things to make that happen. But sometimes the specifics of our life are just too jagged, too rugged, too difficult, and it's just going to be what it's going to be. You can't avoid the thing that's there. So then it's, how do you incorporate it? How do you live with it? How do you deal with the outcome of that circumstance? You know, I do think there is a way to talk to some people that is a neutralizing force. It has to do with a kind of honesty or directness or being real, knowing that there could be consequences that come out of that, because some people don't like reality, they don't like being neutralized, you know. It's real world experience is very hard for everybody. Mm-hmm. So the dance that we all do, you know, it's a fascinating dance. We have power, we have influence, we have lack of power, you know, we're all tops, bottoms, we know everybody's something in life. And you change positions a lot, and what are you? And you have to move from where you are in that very moment into the outcome that you want. And if it doesn't happen, you find a way to go, thy will be done. And that will may be not your will.
Right. Mm. Right. Thank you. Thanks.
Anyone else?
I have a technical question.
Technical.
Yeah, about the double breath.
Right. You'd asked me earlier if I would do this. Dennis wants me to repeat the double breath exercise, which is, you know, is a fairly big version of it, that I can talk for half an hour, and I won't do that now. But the simple version of the double breath is to bring, if you will, attention and consciousness inside from being totally caught up in outer form. The double breath is to draw the world and your attention in through your two physical eyes and your third eye here, to let that energy come in. You do it with the teacher in this situation. You let the energy, you feel the energy coming at you very gently, and you let, Rudy said it's like sucking on a straw, so you just draw that energy in, and then you take the energy of the atmosphere, the pranic energy, and you inhale it through your nostrils so it merges in the third eye. In the third eye, it becomes very nutrient rich. You inhale that energy, and it goes down your throat. It goes past your throat chakra. When it comes right here, you swallow, relax it, and it opens, and it starts to fill that chakra. You keep inhaling. The air goes into your lungs. The energy goes into the center of your chest and your heart chakra. You hold your breath for about 10 seconds. And you ask inside for help to surrender. The heart chakra is this extraordinary place of nourishment and love. It has a capacity, as do all the chakras, like plant forms, to open. And when this energy comes in, it kind of is like the sunlight hitting a flower. It kind of goes, oh, and it opens, and it opens, and it can keep opening. It has no limitation in terms of the vastness of its opening. But you just let it open. The two incredible ideas there are asking for help to surrender. Help means that there's outer forces, perhaps the entire universe, geared to help you. Surrender means get out of your own way for 10 seconds. Get out of your head. Get out of your need to be cognating anything. Just be. After 10 seconds or so, Rudy said, you exhale about a fifth of the air you're holding in your lungs, and then you take a second breath, which he called the double breath, up into your forehead, third eye, throat, heart, and then down into the navel chakra, just below your navel and a little bit inside. Make some room there, unbuckle your pants if they're buckled, or unzip and push your abdomen down and out a little bit. Focus your attention in the navel chakra. Ask again for help to surrender. The sensations you get in your heart, which can be multiple sensations of joy and love and openness and comfort and well-being. Same sensations occur down here, but they're stronger. They're really dynamic. Whatever you feel happening in your navel chakra, bring it into your sex chakra. Kind of direct it downward, or it will go by itself. Then lead it around to the base of your spine, or it will travel there by itself. Either way, get it to the base of the spine, at which point you can make one of two movements that you're allowed in the class, which is a kind of a wiggle or a rotation on your spine, at which point the energy of the kundalini at the base of the spine will begin to rise up your spine to the top of your head. If it gets caught in your spinal cord going into your brainstem right here, you'll get some tension. You can rotate. The energy will go to the top of your head and do one of several things. One of them is shoot out into the universe and give you a sense of cosmic awareness, if you will. Or it can just fill your brain and kind of what I call marinate the brain, kind of wash it, cleanse it. Or it can overflow, cup runneth over, and it goes down through all the chakras, which are now open. It goes to the base of the spine, it goes up the stem again through the spinal cord, and it has this thing of moving through the center of your body and creating a core sensibility. And this core of you inside is the kind of the stabilizing factor of, it's the kind of the organizing principle of you. And if all of these are open and the energy is moving through all of them, it becomes integrative, meaning it integrates your mind with your voice, your heart with your sexuality, your gut level sensibility with your instincts. And you start to have a huge, dynamic life in the world and also beginning in the world beyond. And that's all coming through this double breath. And you do it 8 to 10 times in a half an hour, or maybe once every three minutes. That's the practice as it's given by Rudy. I can only say that if you sit down and you are still and you find yourself to be profoundly present, then trying to get present is meaningless. Trying to open up to this process is meaningless. There's nothing to do. It just kind of gets in the way. So if you're sitting here and the energy is just flowing and filling you, don't do the double breath. Just be. But let's say you're home or you're here and your mind is wandering to why everywhere else in the world. The best way to collect that mind and to collect your energy and collect this sort of sense of being lost in the universe is to bring it in with that double breath, move it through the system, and feel yourself connected to this inner state. It's really a very valuable practice. But I do know that for myself, after the awakening experience, the idea of trying to bring myself back was not meaningful, because I wasn't not ever back. I was just back. I was just there. So, or I don't like the word was. I am there. So that's, it changes it in a way. But that's the double breath. For those of you who are working with double breath, and you should all be working with double breath, because it's the best tool in the toolbox as far as I'm concerned. But when you start to really center and you start to really get in touch with being, just relax into it. Don't disturb it. Don't try to come into the room when you're already in the room. Anybody else? Yes, long conversation. Okay, guys, thank you for coming. We'll be back. We'll be back next month. I don't know how many of you listen to any of the talks online, but I will tell you that there's a lot being said in the last 6 months. There's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of changes taking place. So if you want to stay current, it's probably a good idea to just tap into them. Okay? Thank you all for coming.